And now, for a little smorgasbord of spiritual interactions, let's welcome Sandy Zielinski. Sandy is a retired professor from the School of Theater and Dance at ISU. She was an educator for 43 years and counting at the secondary and university level, and now is teaching at Young at Heartland, the seniors whose stage illusions, She teaches at Young at Heartland, and they're wonderful. Oh, this is funny. She does speak in tongues. So don't be surprised if strange sounds enter from her during her storytelling. She's born in Richmond, Virginia, so folklore is in her blood. First time performing in eons, so please be gentle, she says. Let's welcome Sandy.
Welcome to my world. There are episodes in our life that are scary, supernatural, if you will. Some are absolutely glorious, but we all embrace, hopefully, we embrace those times, whatever they are. The first story I have for you tonight is about my mother. Now, my father was a cab driver, owned a cab company of two cars. My mother worked at the cab company as a dispatcher. So my father did not trust banks at all. So he had this humongous safe in our basement. That's where he kept his money. That's where he kept all of his important papers. Everything was down there, right? Now, my mother feared that someone in the middle of the night would come in and take that safe. Now, this safe, you couldn't move it. Even when we moved out of the house, they couldn't bring it upstairs. It was so heavy, right? Well, my mother then went to my father and said, Smoke, I want to learn how to carry a gun. I wanted to learn how to shoot because that will help me. My father said, Mert, there's no way I'm going to tell you how to shoot a gun, let alone show you, because you'll kill me or yourself first. That was the end of it. So mother did not have a gun to protect her. Now, my father worked in the morning, slept in the afternoon, went back to work at night. So he closed shop at about 2 o'clock in the evening. He would come home, everything's nice, peaceful, quiet, right? Well, this particular night, before I tell you, I should tell you how my mother dressed. Her nightly garb was a very long nightgown, pink or blue, one or the other. She also had a very tattered robe. She then wrapped her hair in toilet paper, right? And then she had a cap on top of that. Now, she got her hair done on Fridays, so it had to last the week. That's why she had the toilet paper, the cap. She was buttoned in, right? Ready for bed. Now, what she decided to do was, instead of have a gun, have something that she could grab. A hammer. She kept a hammer under her pillow. This particular night, sleeping away, there was this noise. And she kind of... Again, and she thought, ugh, that's Smoke. He forgot his key, and I'm not going to let him in. Went back to sleep, kind of, but this noise continued. And so she thought, hey, better let him in. So she grabbed the hammer, went through this very dark house, got to the back door, and as she got there, a man was coming through the door. Now, he saw her. Think about that. He screamed. She screamed. She threw the hammer and ran back to her bedroom. The next day, the hammer was found out in the yard, and no blood. And this is the hammer. The next story is about my view of fright, not my mother's. I was very small. I was in my bedroom. It was a single bed, door, and then there was the closet door. And something in the night made me very frightened, backed up against the wall. And I kept looking at that door. And I thought, ooh, why? Why do I have to go through this again? I've done this. Why are they my parents? Why am I not over there? And all of a sudden, I thought, that's not what I should be thinking. Scared me to death. I climbed under my covers, tight around me, and I thought, they're going to come and get me because I let a secret out. That's the end of that little portion. So my fear comes from more of the unknown than the known. Years later, I was teaching at ISU. Barb Ackerman was the voice coach at that particular time. She had a workshop. It was a voice workshop, a Roy Hart workshop, if any of you know his works. He's from France. It's a very expressive kind of workshop. And it was voice. And I asked Barb, I said, do I have to sing? I'm not a singer. Do I have to sing to do this? She said, oh, no, Sandy. It's much more than that. It was in Asheville, all right? And so we drove to Asheville. Now, this was part of her doing, so we had to go early. Going on the road, through Tennessee, and there was this sign for White Pine. And I really wanted to turn off. I really wanted to go there. I was pulled to go there. But we were late. We had to get to where we were going, yada, da, 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 da. So we did. Now, I should explain that I went with a fellow at one point who was from White Pine, Tennessee, all right? Later on, he committed suicide, kind of blew his brains. Not because I died. I was with him, please. It wasn't because of me. But it was circumstances, right? So here we go. On we go. We get to the camp. A week has gone by. The first weekend comes around. I had a chance. I wanted to go and see the family. So I had a chance to go. And I asked Barb, would you go with me? Because I don't know anything around here. Sure, I will. Last minute, she couldn't go. So I thought, okay, I'll just take off myself. I didn't want to go the freeway because that would take too long. So I headed through the mountains. I didn't have a map, didn't know where I was going, but I just knew that that was the direction I had to take. I did get to White Pine, one main street. I thought, okay, I'll know the house. I know it was 10 years ago, but I'll see it. Well, no, I didn't know it. So I went to the edge of town, and then it turns back into the freeway, so I wasn't going that way. Instead, I went through the graveyard. There was an open grave, came back to Main Street, and I thought, well, I'll go to the only gas station in town, because certainly they'll know everybody in this town, right? I mean, that's the place you go. So I went to the gas station, I opened the door, and the man was he was an Eastern gentleman, barely spoke English. I thought, I'm dead. I am really dead. And he said, could he help me? Yes, I'm looking for this house. Do you know? Blah, blah, blah. He said, no, I don't. I'm really very sorry. But why don't you call? And I said, they don't have a telephone. Well, let's look in the phone book. Well, there was a number. He dialed it for me. He handed me the phone. And someone answered on the other side. And I said, you know, is George Ward there, please? Silence. No, he's not. I said, is May there? Who is this? And I told him who I was. And it so happened, he had passed. The ceremony, the funeral, was 5 minutes away from where I was at 7 o'clock, and it was 10 to 7. So I went to the funeral, saw the family, and I found out at that point that when I was passing by on the Friday, that was one of the most lucid times that George was awake, and he asked if I was coming to see him. So strange things do happen without us knowing. I went back the freeway because I don't know how I got there, but the freeway I think was best. Now during this workshop, two shorties. During this workshop, it was very intensive. My voice dropped almost 2 octaves. I mean, kind of workshop. One time I was taking a bath. And I think I stayed in that shower for hours. I must have been a prune when I got out. But one of the illusions that I saw was that I was at a party. And I was downstairs, had to go to the bathroom. Water, makes sense. I had to go to the bathroom. So I had to climb upstairs, which I did. I got upstairs, opened the door, and the floor was gone. And the bathroom, I had to go through this room to get to the bathroom. So I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Well, in my mind, my legs stretched to the outside walls, and I walked over to this room that I could see the people beneath, then got to the other side, legs closed up, right? And I went, opened the door, wouldn't open. Put my legs, my feet on that door, and I'm pulling as hard as I can, and it wouldn't open. And finally, this voice said, just let go, Sandy. I let go, the door opened, and I went through. The second is the other story. It's a little bit, it's short. It was the 2001 kind of music. There was a monolith. I was floating in space, going around, looking at things, saying, hey, this is pretty neat, I like this. At any rate, this monolith was there, so I went up to it. Now, it was not black, as in 2001, but one side was brilliant blue crystals. And I touched them and looked around them, and it was gorgeous. Then I went around to the other side, and it was lace that I could look through until eternity. That's what I'd like to share.